that's perfect lies a perfect little town where one team stands alone. But now, something stirring that will change this place forever.
Perfectville.
Welcome to Perfectville, your first place podcast for your still first place Miami Dolphins, now a part of the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. I am Sam Marcoux, and he is not the two-time, yes, two-time Hall of Famer, Chris Cullen. Chris is actually on vacation with his family, probably the smartest move he could possibly do. It's like he looked at the schedule ahead of time and said, I don't want a podcast the week after we lose to the Patriots. So Chris is on vacation doing his thing. As I said, probably makes him a three-time Hall of Famer considering the timing of not having to talk about the shit show that was the Miami Dolphins team this past week against Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. Well, I tried to warn everyone that we weren't going to win that game. I even predicted a loss, which actually brings me to 4-0 when picking Miami Dolphins games so far this season. 38-7, and the 7 was generous at the end. Brock Osweiler to Frank Gore just to get us on the board. Ryan Tannehill with the worst game of his career. Adam Gase with the worst coached game of his career. Hopefully that is the last of it, because when those two are on, the team is good. When they're off, the team is very, very bad. But it's not just the loss. It's the injuries. We also lost Daniel Kilgore, our center for the year. Him and Josh Sitton, the two key pieces that we got in this offseason to shore up that offensive line, now gone with tricep and bicep tear. So now we are dealing with Ted Larson and some guy named Travis Swanson, which sounds like a TV dinner to me. I don't know. But we're gonna have a discussion about it, because not only is Chris Cullen not here, the good news is that we have a couple of guests joining us here in just a minute. We're actually going to have Mike Woodburn, a.k.a. Slainer, the co-founder and co-host of Fins Up, Fans Down. He's going to join us, and we're going to rewatch the second quarter of this New England Patriots Miami Dolphins debacle. This will be the third time that he actually has to watch this game, once live, plus a second time for his show, and now a third time as I'm forcing him to come here on this show and relive it once again. And then after that, we're going to talk to Travis Wingfield of Locked On Dolphins fame. He's going to come on, talk about the state of this team, whether we are overreacting to this loss or not, and what he thinks is going to go down against the Cincinnati Bengals. But I'm not sure what we're going to do first, if we're going to talk to Travis or if we're going to talk to Mike. That is why we do the coin toss, ladies and gentlemen. And as you guys know, I always lose the coin toss. I always let Chris pick heads or tails, but he is not here, which means I get the honors of picking. And the beauty of this is, even if I lose, I win, because it's just me this week. So I'm going to flip the coin right now, and I'm going to call tails. And it's fucking heads, because why not, right? Because the Miami Dolphins and their fans are not going to win anything this week. So I think we're actually going to start with Mike and reviewing the New England Patriots game. And again, we're going to review the second quarter. We're going to get Mike here on the hotline in just a second. But a little bit of breaking news. Jordan Phillips, seemingly happy to be released by the Miami Dolphins, now a member of the Buffalo Bills. Congratulations to fat loser Jordan Phillips, who now takes that loser moniker to Buffalo and becomes the ultimate loser, a Buffalo loser. Well, there you go. Defensive tackle Jordan Phillips once showed a lot of promise, never lived up to the hype, and just another man down in the Adam Gase era. You know, I'm starting to think that maybe Adam Gase isn't the player's coach that we thought he would be, given his youthful exuberance. He doesn't seem to want to put up with bullshit, or what he defines as bullshit, but it's a little bit curious that every player that leaves Adam Gase seems to be happy about it. I don't know if that's good or if that's bad, but it's definitely something. Something to think about anyways. All right. Well, with that, we're going to go ahead and get Slainer, a.k.a. Mike Woodburn, on the show so we can relive the shit show that is the New England Patriots second quarter, where they scored 21 unanswered and went into halftime up 24-0 after going into that second quarter only up a mere 3-0. So as you can imagine, not a fun quarter for the Miami Dolphins or their fans. So why not relive it? Here we go. And joining me now to not only discuss the shit show that happened in week 4 against the New England Patriots, but also relive it, because we don't have enough pain in our lives this week, right? Citizens of Perfectville. But you guys know this guy. He He is the co-founder and co-host of Fins Up, Fans Down. He is the moderator, or one of the moderators, on the Dolphins subreddit over on reddit.com. Some people know him as Mike. Some people know him as a leprechaun. Most of you know him as Slainer. And I believe that's now your official government name, is it not, Mr. Slainer, sir?
It is indeed, Sam. Thanks for having me on, man. I can't wait to watch this shit show for the third time. Thank you very much.
Now let's talk about that. So this is the third time that you are going to have to watch this New England Patriots domination of the Miami Dolphins, because A, you watched it live when it happened. B, you watched it with your co-host Noah for Fins Up, Fans Down on the latest episode. So for those that don't know, Fins Up, Fans Down is part of the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network, along with Perfect Villain and many other podcasts. Mm-hmm. And what they do is kind of like Mystery Theater Science 3000, where they go back and they rewatch the game that just happened and then do their own commentary over the top of it. Do I kind of have that right?
Yeah, no, it's exactly right. And certain games, you know, you could say that we're worse than the announcers, but I will say whenever we're playing in Foxborough with these announcers, we're definitely better. So, you know, don't even watch the game. Just listen to Fins Up, Fans Down. It'll be way more enjoyable for you, I promise.
Yeah, he's watching all the bad games so you don't have to. Really is quite really what's going on here. And I asked Slainer to come on to this program here today that you are listening to. And I thought, you know what, we promote a little bit of Fins Up, Fans Down because A, I love the concept and I love the show. B, Slainer's been a longtime listener of Perfectville. And C, Chris Cullen is not here, as you guys know. And I needed somebody to be on the other side of the line as I rant like a lunatic so I don't look like I'm just yelling at myself. There's actually somebody else there to chime in every now and then and say, uh-huh, you're right. So for all those reasons and many more, I asked Slainer to come on here and he asked, okay, great, what are we going to do? And I said, well, I'd like to rewatch the second quarter of the Patriots-Dolphins game. And he's
what
like,
what is wrong with you?
Yeah, that's exactly what you said. He said, what is wrong with you? Are you fucking kidding me? You're going to make me watch that for the third time? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to make you watch it for the third time. So before we get into that, because I do want to point out, we're not going to watch the entire game. If you want to understand what the what this concept is, you're actually going to have to go check out Fins Up, Fans Down, and you'll get Mike and Noah's complete thoughts on this game and other thoughts as well. But we are going to do the second quarter, because I really do think this is where the game basically got away from the Miami Dolphins and Dolphins everywhere. So why not relive the most painful part, right? But beyond that, before we get into that, Mike, Slainer, Leprechaun, Leon, what are your thoughts about the Miami Dolphins overall? I mean, we're 3-1, we're in first place, but it feels like a shitty first place, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, so I'm like a, you know, broken housewife at this point. I go from pessimistic to optimistic, you know, at the drop of a hat. You know, the entire offseason, I was kind of pessimistic. And then once we got closer to the season, I began to really get optimistic and really buy into this team. And, you know, if you do check out Fins Up, Fans Down, I mean, Noah and I actually had a couple of prediction episodes where by the end of September, this is what we predicted for us to be 3-1. And, you know, of course, when the season goes on and, you know, the games actually play out, you have different opinions than just the record. And I got to say, this is just classic Dolphins to open up 3-0 exactly how you thought. You know, you're buying into the hype that you dreamed of all this time. And then they drop a game like this. I mean, how many times have we been here, Sam?
Quite a bit. I mean, we had this exact scenario a couple of years ago under Joe Philbin where we started 3-0. And then after week six, we were 3-3. And you're going, what the hell happened? I thought we were good.
Yeah, you know, you were actually on our podcast some of the early stages whenever we were actually experimenting with a guest, and we figured no matter how bad we are, we could bring you on, make our show a little bit better. So people can go back and listen to our Bengals 2013 recap episode. And, you know, the interesting thing, the only reason I bring that up, the interesting thing about that game and that season is we started 3-0, and then we dropped, what, three or four games until we played the Bengals?
Yeah.
That's what I'm worried about. You know, I feel pretty optimistic about the Dolphins right now, this point in the season. I still buy into this team. I still buy into Adam Gase's vision. I don't like that this game fell apart in such a disastrous way like it did. But we are 3-1, and we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, I don't want it to end up like the Philbin era, you know, where 2013, we lose to the Bengals here. We lose to the, you know, Bears the next week. Next thing you know, we're 3-4. We're below 500. It's not good.
No, I mean, I'm actually calling this the Wizard of Oz portion of our season right now, because we're about to have the Lions, Tigers, and Bears. Oh, my. Not in that order, of course, but we've got the Bengals, Bears, and Lions. And looking at this before the season, you know, the Bears seemed like a good chance at a victory, which is why I'm going to that damn game, is I thought, hey, if I'm going to watch the Miami Dolphins for the first time in Miami, I damn well better hedge my bet and find a game that they can win. And I was thinking the Bears game looked like a win. And I think before the season, I had no faith in the Cincinnati Bengals whatsoever. Yet here they are 3-1, and they look good. They look like a good 3-1 as opposed to our bad 3-1.
They look very good. That's the thing that Noah and I talked about in our recent episode of, you know, Fins Up, Fans Down. We talked pretty in depth about how the Bengals, I mean, they're on all cylinders. Meanwhile, we look like we're just kind of barely making it here. And you have to look at how these teams have played the game so far. And I'm not taking anything away from the Dolphins' record. It's very good that they're 3-1 right now. But one thing that I've said many times on our podcast is that we were expected to be 3-1 at this point. We had an easy opening to our schedule. I don't want to get too swept up in, you know, the early part of the season, much like our head coach Adam Gase doesn't want to. You know, records really don't matter right now. You have to look at how the teams are playing. And, you know, you mentioned Chicago. Chicago is kind of like us to a more extreme. You know, their offense looks putrid at times, but their defense is unreal. And that matchup, that scares me a lot.
Yeah, you know, the thing about Chicago that doesn't scare me is I do think Adam Gase is looking at that. If you look at our coaching staff, a lot of them came from that Chicago Bears team. So I do think he's almost got that game circled as a way to, you know, rub it back in their faces that they let all this good talent, quote unquote, go. Ironically enough, looking at the schedule, we're actually, this is almost like the Adam Gase resurrection tour, and that he's going up against all of his old haunts, if you will, with the Denver Broncos, Chicago Bears, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I'm not scared about that game. That defense scares me. And really, I think what scares me more than anything is if I look at this Miami Dolphins team, I'm not sure if I'm overreacting to the one loss or if I'm looking at this and going, with so many injuries and still some unrest when it comes to players in the locker room, as we saw with Jordan Phillips as he got released this week and was seemingly doing backflips outside of Davie, Florida, to get away from this terrorist regime, so to speak.
Well, and to the Bills. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I'm sure he'll be much happier in Buffalo, New York than, you know, Miami, Florida. So good luck, Jordan Phillips.
Yeah, good luck to joining the Buffaloozers. I think it's a match made in heaven up there. But still, I mean, the point being, it seems like we still have a little bit of civil unrest. We still have a ton of injuries. I mean, Cam Wake is now injured. We're not sure if he's even going to be playing in this game. It's just kind of like, man, you lose 6 or 7 key starters and personnel, and you look at that between your offense and your defense, that's 22. You have 22 people that you can put on the field between those two units, you know, at any given time. And a third of them are gone a quarter of the way through the season. So to me, it kind of looks at this and goes, I go, wow, you know, we've got some long-term problems here. I mean, if you don't have Rashad Jones, if you don't have Cameron Wake, if you don't have Bobby McCain, if you don't have Devontae Parker to an extent, if you don't have Daniel Kilgore and you don't have Josh Sitton and you don't have, you know, Hayes, you know, William Hayes, it just kind of seems like, do you have enough depth and talent to overcome all of that? And I don't know if we do. And I was thinking about this today, you know, especially with this game that we're going to get started here in the second quarter. The one guy that I think that's disappointed me the most out of all of this is Danny Amendola. I really expected more out of him early this season. And quite frankly, he's been Devontae Parker, but on the field, and that he's been invisible and irrelevant through 4 games. And it really kind of concerning because I thought he was supposed to be that veteran presence that, you know, really helped Ryan Tannehill early before, you know, the other people like Gesicki and maybe Albert Wilson could start stepping up and get that that chemistry with Ryan and the rest of the offense. And Danny just hasn't done jack shit, quite frankly. I don't know how else to put it.
Well,
here, you know, with Miami,
it is interesting that you mentioned that, Sam, because I mean, you know, we rewatch these games, and you're right, Amendola's name really hasn't come up much at all. Instead, of course, you have Jakeem Grant, Albert Wilson, you know, you have all these other guys making plays, and you're right, you would have expected him to be more of that possession guy, that Landry replacement, in the sense that, oh, I need 5 yards here. Boom, Amendola. And you're right, we haven't seen that. That is an interesting point. You know, the offense as a whole, you know, Adam Gase in general, we're getting to a point now where these slow starts are becoming a pattern, not just through this season, but through the entire thing. And you know, we've had our fair share of injuries. I mean, we've lost two starters, two people that we brought into this offensive line to bolster it, and now they're out for the season. Now we're back to square one. Now, thank God that our tackles are playing, and frankly, out of their minds. But I guess what I'm ultimately getting at is I don't want to blame any loss that we have or any failure that we have on injuries. Injuries happen to every team, and that's why you spend the offseason preparing for the possibility of injuries. That's, again, not to take away the severity of losing Bobby McCain, William Hayes, Daniel Kilgore, Josh Sitton, you know, possibly Cam Wake, Rashad Jones for the last two games. You know, all these guys, these are big guys. But this staff has got to prepare better. I mean, this game is inexcusable. I don't care which way you want to, you know, really place the blame. It's inexcusable.
No, I agree with you. I think this game in particular, and we're about to see it, we're about to fire it up. For those that want to follow along, we're starting right at the second quarter, 15 minutes on the clock. You should see Ryan Tannehill in a shotgun formation, trips to his right, third and 13 on their own 33. We'll fire that up here in just a second. And you're absolutely right when it comes to that. I mean, if we had all those players, I still think we lose this game by double digits. I mean, it was not even close.
The way the Patriots played, I mean, there's no way. I mean,
yeah,
this was a loss. I mean, chalked in. I mean, before the game even started. I mean, let's just separate ourselves from the hype. I mean, this is just not a game that we win.
No, and that's the part I think that makes me concerned is that we do have all these injuries, and it's hard to overcome that. And even if you can, looking at this game plan and looking at this play calling and the execution or lack thereof, there was no shot for the Miami Dolphins here against the Patriots. And, you know, I predicted a loss to the Patriots, but I didn't expect it to be by this much. I mean, overall points, I had it at 38 when it was going to be 25 to 13. Well, the Patriots went and got 38 all by themselves and just made me look like a jackass, made Chris look like a jackass, made my rant against the national media not getting respect last week look really, really stupid.
I did think about that pretty quickly into the game. I thought about, God damn it, Sam. You know, this is why you wait until after these games to make, you know, your big statement. We've been here too much. We'll get into it whenever we get into the game, but I had cautious optimism up until this point, and then in the second quarter, in this quarter, I hit my breaking point, and I just said, I'm done. I can't root for this game specifically. I can't get invested in this game specifically. It's going to ruin my Sunday. It's going to ruin my Monday, frankly, if I get too invested. So I powered through. I watched the entire game, but I knew the outcome, and I trudged through it. I'm just done getting as invested as I did, you know?
Yeah, and you're not the only person who thought of my rant, because I got heat from everyone on Twitter and through Gmail and everything else.
Oh, I bet. Like,
all right, I get it. I understand. I'm still right, by the way, all you assholes who flamed me. I'm still 100% right about my rant, and I'll stand behind that rant. That's not the point. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then. I'm just saying that the timing of it looked awfully fucking shitty for me, and I understand that, and I own that. But the point is, this game was not winnable, and that's why I predicted a loss. I just did not predict it to the extent. This is Brian Tannehill's worst game in his career.
It is. Noah and I talked about that, and, you know, in our last episode. It is absolutely not only his worst game of his career, but here's the thing. Adam Gase has been shut out a couple other times, and he's had putrid other games, you know, where he wasn't shut out, but he essentially was, much like this game. And here's the thing. It's not just Tannehill's worst game. I think it's Adam Gase's worst game that he's coached. Noah mentioned that in our last episode, and I had to think about it. But any other bad game, you could kind of place the blame to Jay Cutler, Matt Moore, something. This is his team. A couple injuries here and there, but no NFL team is really healthy 100% week to week. This is on Adam Gase and Ryan Tannehill, this entire loss, in my opinion.
And I'm okay with that, and that actually gives me hope, because how often do you see Ryan Tannehill play that poorly and Adam Gase coach that poorly? And if you have those two guys firing on all cylinders, you have a shot. But if they're both going to be poor like this, then you don't. And that's very rare to have that much go wrong at the same time. It's almost a perfect storm. Usually there's some redundancy there where the talent will overcome the bad, you know, coaching and play calling, or vice versa. In this case, that just did not happen at all. And why not go ahead and, you know, relive it? So for those that want to relive this with us, we're actually watching this on the condensed game version, because we don't want to sit through an hour of our, you know, dicks getting kicked in. So if you are watching this on the, however you're watching it, the second quarter, The Dolphins are on 3rd and 13. What an auspicious start to rewatching a game. The Patriots are up 3-0. So within one score, obviously, it's 7 minutes and 13 seconds into the NFL Game Pass app if you're going to watch this along with us. I'm going to go ahead and hit play on the countdown here, Mike, and then I'm going to go ahead and let you take over how to do this.
Real quick, before you get to the countdown, yep. Sam, I just want to mention to your listeners, anytime a big play happens and Sam and I think that we need to slow down, I'm just going to say pause, and we're both going to know to pause at the next time the Dolphins or the Patriots line up at the next snap. So that'll give us some breathing room to talk about if anything big happens. But this game doesn't have a whole lot of pausing from our experience.
Yeah, chances are we're going to be pausing a lot when Tom Brady has the football, based on from what I remember. And also, all right, so let's go ahead and do the countdown.
Sure.
3, 2, 1, play.
All right, so 3rd and 13, Tannehill has the ball. And he has time in the pocket there. And throws what, a good 6-7 yards behind the sticks?
Yeah, and then all of a sudden we have Matt Hawk, who has looked good in some cases and had a great punt right here, and a terrible coverage as he runs it back past the 30 after he pinned him into the inside the 10. But Matt Hawk is sometimes Matt Hack in that he's just so wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, he definitely is.
How he punts,
He definitely is, and it's a problem too. I trust Darren Rizzi, and who he picks for special teams. He's proven that Matt Hawk can make amazing, put the Jets game. I mean, we won because of Matt Hawk, in my opinion. But other times he just puts out stinkers all game. It's a problem.
Yeah, and now here I am. I'm looking at this. It's a 3rd down. We're trying to get off the field, and Xavier Howard is called for illegal hands to the face, or illegal contact, I should say, down the way. Automatic first down. I hate this rule. I don't understand why it's an automatic first. It should just be a replay of the down with a 5-yard walk off. But I don't get to make the rules here.
Well, also, we're playing in Foxborough, and let's just face it, ticky tacky stuff is always going to go against us. The Patriots have a touchdown here shortly that we'll get into. Little pick play where, sometimes it would be called in other stadiums if we weren't playing the Patriots in Foxborough.
Be 3 against the Raiders, and by the way, 3rd and 6, and you just there leave you this guy wide open. Of course, it's from the rub, it's from the pick.
So
that's why Cordarrelle Patterson gets the touchdown.
Let's go ahead and pause this once they line up, because there's already a lot to rant about. I don't even want to say talk about, because, let's face it, it's ranting at this point. I mentioned this on our latest episode, Sam, but when is the last time you have heard the words, Cordarrelle Patterson has a 56-yard touchdown?
I think it was during the highlights of the day he got drafted by the Vikings or whenever that was. That was the last time, because they were showing highlights of him in college. It just doesn't happen with him as a pro. In my opinion, he is a burnout. He's not a guy who's done anything. So, of course, he goes to the Patriots and has a career day against the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah. There was a time last year where it was Monday Night Football, I believe, and we were going to play the Panthers. Also, Sam, I'm going to go ahead and pause here. We're 11:57 left on the clock. But it was a Monday Night Football game, and we were playing the Panthers, and I remember sending a tweet. It was something like Pro Football Focus sent out that Christian McCaffrey and whoever the other running back was, Jonathan Stewart, averaged like a career low of like 2 yards or 1.9 per carry or something. And I remember sending out a tweet going, they're playing the Dolphins, they're going to have career days today. And sure enough, they did. This game was no different. Josh Gordon, I expected to literally have 2 touchdowns. He didn't. He made a couple plays. But Cordarrelle Patterson, I can't remember the last time I've heard his name.
He's so irrelevant that I can't even say his name right, or neither can you. I think it's actually Cordarrelle or Cordarrelle. I don't know. Corduroy? I have no idea. that's how insignificant he is. He's in our division, and I can't be bothered to even know his name.
I forgot he was on the Patriots.
I honestly did, too. I was like, is that Brandon Bolden? Who is that? I had no idea who that was. It turns out Brandon Bolden's actually playing for the Miami Dolphins. I had no idea. But, he's that irrelevant. And of course, the game plan I had along with Chris Cullen was, hey, take away Rob Gronkowski and force the Patriots to beat you with somebody else. And you know what? That's exactly what they did.
Well,
because Gronkowski really didn't do shit in this game, but everyone else did.
So I hated the announcers this game. I'm sure all of your listeners did too. I won't get really into that, but they kept mentioning this game. The Patriots were beating us with man coverage. And that's a problem because we have a lot of fast guys, on offense. Yep. And that they couldn't scheme them in better positions at all. I mean, there's look, there's 100 different things, not just Gase's play calling, not just Tannehill's play. The receivers weren't getting separation. Mike Gesicki, as a starter with two tight end injuries, played terribly.
He's got to get better.
Both as a receiver and a blocker. I mean, he played terribly.
Mainly as a receiver. There's no hope for him as a blocker. That guy's awful. He is dog shit when it comes to blocking. I mean, he's getting knocked around by like 7-year-olds out there. But he's supposed to be this whiz kid when he's, you know, receiving the ball. And he's just not doing it. I mean, not yet. And I did not expect him to do a lot early. The time is now. I mean, he's got to do it against this Bengals team and the Bears team and everyone else after this. I mean, his feet are to the fire.
Here's something that Noah and I talked about a lot during the offseason, and something that we haven't seen a lot during the four games here, but we have a lot of different skill position players. It's not just Mike Gesicki and Durham Smythe as tight ends. It's not just our wide receivers with all the speedy guys that we have. We also have Frank Gore and Kenyon Drake, who not only are Kenyon Drake, at least an explosive running back, but both are good blockers, good receivers.
Well, you need to, first of all, you need to stop. Sorry, I'm going to cut you off right here. Mm-hmm. You need to stop lying. The Miami Dolphins do not have any running backs on their roster whatsoever, based on what I've seen over the last 2 weeks against the Raiders and the Patriots.
That's a problem.
The only running
back
that they have is Ryan Tannehill.
It's a real problem that we have not had any sort of rushing game. I thought this was the game we would start to get it going again.
I agree.
But what I was getting at with that is I want to see more, unique personnel. I want to see like 21 personnel. I want to see Frank Gore and Kenyon Drake and Mike Gesicki on the field at the same time. If it means that we have two running backs blocking or one blocking and it opens up Mike Gesicki, I mean, whatever we need to do, we need to get our skill position players, catching the goddamn ball. It's been bad.
Now, we did that against Tennessee a little bit. If you guys can remember way back in week 1, and we were kind of joking about how do you name Frank Gore and Kenyon Drake as the starter at the tailback position. And then it turned out he just put both of them on the field at the same time. And it worked out pretty well. I mean, Tennessee didn't really know where the ball was going at times. And I agree with you. I'd like to get back to that. Let's also get back to the
game.
Sure. We are paused at 11:57. The New England Patriots just went from 3-0 to 10-0. That touchdown, by the way, was set up by an illegal pick. That's same exact play for the most part was called as offensive pass interference against the Miami Dolphins the week before against the Oakland Raiders twice here in Foxborough, a little bit of home cooking, nothing. So the Dolphins have just received the ball after the kickoff. I'm getting ready to hit play. Are you ready, Slainer?
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
Uno, dos, tres, play.
All right, so here's another thing. Tannehill all game was locking onto one receiver and frankly just wasn't accurate. You can place the blame literally, flip a coin, roll a die, whatever you want to do. Everyone on offense was to blame. And we're going to get a first down right there because we were just bailed out by pass interference. But we didn't move the ball.
No, the penalties were our best offense right there. And I'm wondering, do you think he was locking on because he knew that he really didn't have a lot of time or that he thought he didn't have a lot of time? So he was just locking onto that first target, waiting for a window and firing it off, thinking that he was probably going to get hit if he did not do that?
Well, here's the thing. You could be absolutely right that that's exactly his thought process and that's why he did it. But this is, his 6th year in the league? 5th, if you want to count the injury? You can't do that anymore. He had protection at points in this game, and sometimes he didn't, and you got to give credit where credit is due and blame him when they're wrong. And Tannehill can't do that at this point in his career.
No, and Matt Hawk just punted it again. He holds the ball weird. He looks like he's dropping the ball and then just happens to do an emergency kick because he dropped the ball. And I've seen other punters do that. It seems to be a new technique. Maybe it's a way to position the ball better, but it looks weird. Have you noticed that?
To be honest, I haven't noticed it. I'll pay closer attention the next, because we're going to have
plenty
of them.
He almost holds it up and down. He almost holds it up and down. Yeah, you're going to get plenty of time to watch him punt. But he almost holds the ball up and down instead of kind of like sideways.
Interesting.
And drops it from there. So it's almost like a top-down sort of thing. And, as we're talking about that, a video game system, Sony Michel, is running all over the Miami Dolphins. And even when they're trying to cheat and get away with it, it doesn't matter. They get pushed back, and then he just runs it again. So what do you think of Sony Michel in this? Is he somebody to be scared of going forward?
So, I frankly do think so. Not because I watch a ton of college and I know a ton about Sony Michel, but, I mean, let's face it. Bill Belichick wanted him. He's had a rotating, running back room for a long time. That's the guy that he decided to get in the first round. When's the last time you had a Patriots regime pick a first-round running back? So if they have this much faith in the guy, I think he'll be good. I will say... we made him a lot better than he is this game.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, what a basically a debut to have. And of course, Tom Brady's got all day to throw. I might be a little bit ahead of you, but I do want to point out that Micah Fitzpatrick on almost consecutive plays killed a guy and then German suplexed another player to prevent a third down conversion. He German suplexed him with 2 yards to go. And really, we have a talent in Micah Fitzpatrick. I mean, all the negatives that occurred in this game and in this quarter.
He was a shining spot. He absolutely was. Noah and I, you know, at the end of every game that we rewatch, we do Fins Up or Fans Down, a little segment where we choose the three best or the three worst players of the game. And Minka was the only let's actually pause it the next time they line up. There's a lot I want to talk about here. But Noah and I were talking about, you know, how Minka was the only player where you can unquestionably say Fins Up. He was phenomenal this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, if you go back and watch that sequence, I think that's the only time we stopped the Patriots in the second quarter. And a lot of it has to do with Micah Fitzpatrick breaking up a screen pass and just laying the boom on the Patriots player. And then, you know, a play or two later, he's stopping the ball after it is completed, after Tom Brady had all day and night to throw that pass. And literally German suplexed the guy. So he was behind him, put his arms around his waist, and then threw him over his head out of bounds. And it was fourth down, and they had to punt. And you're thinking at this point, at least I am, okay, you just stopped him. It's 10-0. Okay, you're in New England. You're in Foxborough. You're down by 10. You really cannot afford to be down by any more than this. At this point, even if it's a field goal, the Miami Dolphins have to score, and then disaster strikes.
Yeah, you know, you couldn't have said it any better, Sam. Let me run you through basically my mindset at this point in the game, or a little bit before this point in the game. Same thing you said, you know, we forced the Patriots to punt. Minka Fitzpatrick has a great defensive stop. And just sidetrack real quick, the only bad play I have seen Minka Fitzpatrick have, if you can even call it a bad play, is his tackle on Marshawn Lynch, where he tried to, you know, throw him down with his shoulder and he got punked, really.
That's not reading the scouting report there, and I don't blame him. I mean, that guy, Marshawn Lynch, might be the hardest man to tackle in the NFL to this day.
Yeah, but he has consistently proven that he is a solid tackler, and I mean, he can stop someone well short of the sticks, and it's going to be a great thing. I think we've all had our eyes on Minka, you know, all game, every game, and he has not disappointed. But getting back to what happened on this game, you know, so the Patriots punt the ball, we're lined up. And at this point, Daniel Kilgore is actually out. He got injured. Yep. And what was it? Tore his meniscus or?
No, I think he tore his bicep or his tricep.
That's right.
Very similar injury to Josh Sitton, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm not sure what's going on in the weight room there. But these guys got some tight tendons that are popping.
It's not good. It's really not good, because now that interior O-line that was already not strong is even weaker. And, well, basically what happens is we have, what's his name, Travis Swanson.
Yeah, Travis Swanson, which sounds like a creative player in Madden. Like, that's the guy that you draft from Purdue.
Well, I'll tell you what, he sure as shit played like one, Sam, because he lived up to this really, really annoying, you can call it a meme at this point. He lived up to this annoying thing that we have in Miami where our center, our backup center, whatever, will snap the ball over Tannehill's head. And, well, if you remember correctly, Dolphins, three safeties in three games, I believe in the Dan Campbell era.
Yeah, that I remember it well, and it was at some point you just kind of throw your hands up and go, "Yep, that's us. That's so Dolphins." But all right, you ready to relive this?
Unfortunately, I want to stay on this just for one more second.
Okay.
Because I ranted about this a lot on our latest episode, but I just want to rant about it just real quick here. Why is this, Sam, a thing? Because this is a thing with Miami now. This is literally a thing where you can just say, "Oh, look, this is the Miami Dolphins always snap the ball like Peyton Manning in Super Bowl 48 or whatever, 49, snap the ball over their head, oh, ha, 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 ha." But it shouldn't be a thing. This should be so simple to correct, but here we are.
Yeah, no, I'm going to give, the only thing I'm going to give credit to right now is that this is basically the first play Travis Swanson is in after Kilgore is out. And obviously there's a miscommunication as to, you know, when the ball should be snapped. Ryan Tannehill's not paying attention, and maybe he's not supposed to because he's still reading the defense as they line up. But either way, it does not look good. And to the average fan, which I consider myself to be, you just kind of look at this and go, what the fuck? I mean, if this was the Bills or the Jets or the Patriots, we'd be laughing our asses off. So
for sure.
I really could make as many excuses as I want, but it's just bad. Whatever it is, it's bad.
I think that's the best way to put it. So, yeah, if you're ready to get back into the game, let's do it on three.
Yeah, with hype like that. 3, 2, and 1, and hold your butts because everyone's going backwards. And the worst part about it is Ryan actually got the ball back, and then he got it taken from him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it sucks. And that touchdown that – who was that, James White? Look at Robert Quinn here on this play. He just gets destroyed. I mean, completely misses his block. Almost looked like he broke his ankle, frankly. And James White takes it 20-some-odd yards for a touchdown. And
yeah, it's...
You know, this is... I don't know about you, Sam, but sorry to talk over you. This is the point I gave up in the game. Here we are with 7.5 minutes left in the second, and I was already giving up on the game.
Yeah. Well, why wouldn't you? I mean, they threw a stat up there during the game that any time the Patriots are up by 10 during a game, they're like 111-3. I mean, they just don't lose when they're up by that much. And at this point, they're up by 17. And, you know, looking at that fumble again, that ball was not over his head. It was actually at his shoulder, and Ryan Tannehill missed it. So it's either Ryan Tannehill wasn't paying attention and it's his fault, or maybe Swanson most likely snapped it a beat too soon. And caused that dilemma. But, yeah, in that case, I'm going to give some credit, if you want to call it that, to just a new exchange between the center and the quarterback. But, you know, looking at this, doesn't matter. It's an incomplete pass. But at the same time, we got a personal foul on Miami, half the distance to the goal, 2nd and 22. Hand the ball off to Kenyon Drake, who spins, runs the other way, spins again, can't get away, and loses another yard. And here we are at 3rd and 23 at this point, 24?
Yeah, so 3rd and 24, little dump off to, I don't even know who that was at this point. It was Albert Wilson or Jakeem Grant?
It was Jakeem Grant, and we threw it for a yard in front of the actual 24 yards out. So, I mean, even if he, you know, gets 10, 15 yards, he's still going to be 10 yards short. It's an awful, awful... Well,
it's terrible. I mean, you're 17-0 at this point. I get you're backed up in your own end zone, but, you know, here's the thing is I didn't give up hope at 10-0. It already wasn't looking good, but that's just the Adam Gase era at a certain point. You just learn to kind of deal with that. But then, you know, that fumble and then the immediate touchdown, 17-0. And then at that point, I mean, you can almost just laugh and say same old Dolphins. I mean, we've seen this before. So... I was just done. And then, you know, the Patriots have the ball at this point, and they're just busting out 10-plus, you know, yard per run at this point. Defense is totally worn down. Why get so invested at this point, you know?
Well, and same old Dolphins, you're seeing 3rd and 7, and they're doing dump-offs to the running back and getting first downs. And then they're so just dismayed after they couldn't get off the field on 3rd and long again that Sony Michel gashes them after that for, what, 20, 30 yards, something like that. I mean, they just couldn't be stopped at this point. I think mentally, not only were you checked out, but I think the Dolphins themselves were checked out because it was just like a knife through, you know, hot knife through butter. I mean, they were taking 3, 4, 5 yards minimum, and every now and then we'd get a stop. You know, we'd get a good play here, there, and everywhere, but you know, 3rd and 11, and what happens? Tom Brady sits in the shotgun, does his taxes, and then throws the ball 3 yards short of the first down, and their guys somehow get it. So it's just kind of like,
what
do you do?
It's real bad. And you know, there's a few things that I can point to about like why it was so bad. And one of the things is that we actually did have pressure on the Patriots, you know, pretty much all game. Cameron Wake or Robert Quinn, they were right in Brady's face. They were either knocking him down, almost getting that sack, but not quite. And, you know, the reason why we weren't able to complete those sacks is just because he was able to dump it off to Sony Michel or James White. I mean, why force it downfield when everyone's covered? Yeah. I mean, just dump it off and you're done.
And I'm gonna be honest right now. We're at the 2-minute warning. Full disclosure: this is when I turned the game off when it was live. I knew it was over, and
did
I was like, "Ooh, it's a commercial break.
You
it's time for
so,
me to go watch." I think I watched the Dodgers Giants game. To
wow.
be honest with you.
So Noah, yeah. You know, on our latest episode, he admitted that he cut the game off at the first interception by Tannehill. Whenever he horribly underthrows Albert Wilson, I believe. And I gotta, you know, I'll openly say that I didn't cut it off. I watched it till the very end, and I hate myself for it. I respect you as a man, Sam, for deciding to do that.
No, I just, you know, look, I'm in my 30s. I have children. I'm, you know, I've got a bunch of other things going on. I like other sports. I could think of a million other things that were going to be less painful, including cleaning out my freaking garage than watching this game. And that's actually what I did. I think I watched a little bit of the baseball game, then I went and cleaned out my garage. It wasn't fun. It was not a fun game. And,
no,
I watched football for it to be fun.
Genuinely terrible. And I agree. I watched football for it to be fun, but I, for whatever reason, am again like a broken housewife at this point, and I.
Yeah.
I can't look away, and it hurts. It really hurts. This game, I mean, the Patriots, I think I'm a little ahead of you, but Brady just threw a touchdown to Dorsett, and now the Patriots are up 24-0. You know.
Yeah, no, this is one of the things. So when I turned it off, it was 17-0. There was 2 minutes left, and I thought, you know, maybe they'll get a field goal. I was not thinking they'd get another touchdown, but when I checked in on the game later, and it was 24-0, and Dorsett does a flip for a forward flip as he catches the ball in front of Xavien Howard, by the way.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, that was offensive pass interference. He pushed Howard off of him on the break, but it's not going to be called. And even with that,
I mean, honestly, at a certain point, I mean, they were able to drive downfield so effortlessly that, I mean, I just don't care about the touchdown, you know? I mean,
right. Who
really cares if it's 17-0 or 24-0? You're losing either way. What's more important is just that they let the Patriots effortlessly get downfield into the end zone and be able to make that play. Whether the play was a penalty or not, really, I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, do you think, as we're rounding out the first half here, do you think the Dolphins players at this point knew it was over? Do you think they were just like, you know what, we're just going to collect our paycheck. We got to get through the second half, try not to get injured, but we're not winning this game.
You know, it is interesting. So I'm going to go ahead and exit the game. I'm done with the second quarter, and that's all we're going to get through, Sam. But that's all I can make it through, frankly. But to answer your question, you know, these are professional athletes, and this is Gase's, you know, quote-unquote culture, his guys, you know, blah, blah, blah. I like to think that, no, they wouldn't have given up, but, I mean, they were so horribly outclassed that, let's be frank, yeah, I think they gave up, you know. I think that they decided this is out of our hand, and it's interesting. In our latest episode, down the fourth quarter when Brock Osweiler is in, and, you know, he's driving the ball downfield, Frank Gore seemed like he was the only player that was genuinely trying, but no one else.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. It does make sense. But no one else seemed like they were putting in that effort. It just seemed like they just wanted to get the game over with. And, you know, I'd like to say who can blame them, but no, I can blame them. They deserve to get their shit handed to them, frankly.
Well, and I think the Patriots knew it was over, because if you look at the end of that second half or the second quarter there, I mean, they're basically in a prevent defense, and you're seeing, the dump off to Kenyon Drake and a couple of other passes, I think, to Gesicki and things like that. But they're giving that up because they don't really care. They're just trying to run the clock out and get to halftime.
Oh,
and have
their play calling
juice boxes.
Was evident in that. I mean, if they weren't running the ball, they were dumping it off. It was, you know, end of story.
Yeah, so, I mean, all things considered, that was the second quarter. I'm exited out as well. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that awful, awful game. As we talked about, the worst game in Ryan Tannehill's career, probably the worst head coaching play calling and just head coaching in general by Adam Gase. Mm-hmm. You guys can relive the entire game, if you would like, over at Fins Up, Fans Down. They do it when they win, too, so you could actually go check out their archives against the Raiders, the Jets, the Tennessee Titans. They'll be doing it for the Cincinnati Bengals as well. Real quick here, I'm going to be talking to Travis Wingfield about the Cincinnati Bengals game, but what are your thoughts going into that Bengals game here real quick, Mike, before we part ways here in Perfectville?
You know, I'm not just saying this because of how we lost to the Patriots. The Bengals scare me. They're a high-powered offense. Joe Mixon is going to be back. I think he's a monster. We definitely haven't proved that we can stop the run. If anything, we've proved that it's only getting worse. The Patriots exposed that this game. You know, they have AJ Green, who I'm confident Xavien Howard can, you know, cover, but Bobby McCain is out, and you know, granted, we're getting Rashad Jones back. I still don't have a whole lot of faith in that defense. Enough to where I think the Bengals are going to get about 25-plus on us. And then vice versa, our offensive line is so beaten down, and the Bengals with, I'm blanking on the guy's name right now, but they're a star player on the D-line.
Talking about Geno?
Yeah, Geno Atkins, yeah. He is going to destroy us. Our tackles are amazing, but our interior O-line, I don't know if we're going to get a run game going this game. If we can scheme it outside, you know, maybe we'll see. I see us doing a lot better on offense, because I don't think Adam Gase is going to stick, you know, two stinkers out there. But what I predicted in our latest episode was a 27-23 Bengals win. So it'll be more formidable than this game here, but unfortunately I see a loss coming.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. I'll reveal my prediction here. here later in the show here on Perfectville. But in my opinion, you know, you look at that offensive line, and I'm almost wondering, could you almost do like an offensive line stunt where the tackle's going to block down and you're just going to kick your guards out to take on whatever defensive end or linebacker is coming out? You know, if there was ever a case to have a jumbo offense where you're going to put Smythe and even Gesicki, as bad as he is, but maybe he can just throw his body at somebody else and slow him down somewhat. This would be the one, you know, to have a large two tight end set and just do max protection and see what you can do with one of your wide receivers getting open. I mean, this is where I do think you miss a Jarvis Landry, because Jarvis Landry has the ability to get open regardless of who's on him. Mm-hmm. And you know, looking at that Patriots game, didn't look like our wide receivers were getting any separation. But you know what? We could chalk it up to them having a bad game as well.
One quick thing I want to mention. I know, you know, you're going to talk to Travis here pretty soon, so I'll let your listeners enjoy that, because I'm sure that's going to be a heck of a lot better than this. But one thing I do want to mention, it was sometime in the fourth quarter. I noticed it in our rewatch of our latest episode. Tannehill forced the ball to either Wilson or Amendola. It might have been the interception play, but it was double coverage. It was a horribly thrown ball. Wasn't really going to go anywhere. Meanwhile, on the left side of the field, Jakeem Grant was running a simple post route, wide open, unbelievably open. I don't want to place the blame on one individual. It literally was. If the blocking was good, the receivers didn't get separation. If the receivers got separation, the blocking wasn't good. And then if everything was good, Tannehill was bad. I mean, it was really just the worst game of his career. I couldn't have really said it better than that.
Like you said, I mean, he was locked into the primary receiver on just about every single play, and that's probably what happened there. But in his defense, I mean, I think the Patriots let the grass grow a little bit longer in this game, and you couldn't see Jakeem Grant after the first 3 yards at that point. There was just too much of the long cut of the grass and the blades of glass. He just, you know, you couldn't see him after that. So
that's fair.
It's like
that's
an
fair.
Ant out there. But, you know, hey, anyway, Slaner, thank you very much for joining us here on Perfectville. You guys can check out Slaner Weekly with his co-host, Noah Urbanski. Am I saying that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Noah Urbanski.
Noah Urbanski, as well as Mike Woodburn. And they have Fins Up Fans. Did I say that right? I messed up your name, didn't I?
No, you got it.
Oh, well, damn it. I was hoping I messed somebody's name up.
No, it's pretty easy. It's Wood and Burn. I mean, it's pretty hard, Sam, to mess up those two words, but you got it, man.
Well, then, you know, I finally got something right. I read the reviews on the show every single week, and I fuck up everybody's name, and I get yelled at by everyone. But I got you guys right, so thank God for that. But they are part of the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. As I said, you can check out the entire New England Patriots rewatch with Mike and Noah, if you so choose. Hopefully you have a better game to review next week after the Bengals game. Although, according to you, it's going to be a loss. And possibly, according to me, if you listen later here in the show, it could be a loss as well. So, Slaner, anything else you'd like to tell the citizens before you get thrown out of town?
No, Sam, I just got to say, thanks for having me on. You know, Perfectville has been my favorite podcast, I mean, really in the last couple of years since you guys started. Always enjoyed the show and, you know, really appreciate you having me on.
No, and I appreciate you being on the show. It's actually been my third favorite podcast, Perfectville. there's a couple others that I like way better than this show, but nonetheless, I appreciate that. And you know what, man, you've been a listener of Perfectville, I think, since the beginning. So we appreciate all your support. And with that, we'll say goodbye to our new guest, Mr. Slaner, Mr. Leprechaun, Mr. Mike. Mike, enjoy the rest of the weekend. Enjoy the game, and we'll talk to you later.
You as well, Sam. Thanks a lot.
We have another.
What's up, citizens of Perfectville? It is Sam here to talk about Amazon.com by way of WelcomeToPerfectville.com. It's time to do all that back-to-school shopping. It's time to get the cool new jerseys for the football season. Time to do all of that fun stuff. But why do it at a store? You're going to have yelling kids everywhere. You're going to have smelly people in front of you, gross people behind you, checkers who don't care whether you live or die. That's right. They don't care if you live or die. Why deal with the human condition when you can do all of that shopping and more at Amazon.com by going to WelcomeToPerfectville.com? Yeah, that's all you got to do. Just click on the Amazon.com banner when you go to our website, and it'll take you directly to Amazon.com where you can do all of your regular shopping. No hidden fees, no extra charges, but since you went to Amazon.com by clicking the link on our website first, it helps your favorite podcast continue to go. So there is no downside, ladies and gentlemen. Just click the link at WelcomeToPerfectville.com to go to Amazon.com and do all of your shopping. All of it. Literally all of it. Food, clothes, utensils, zombie apocalypse, bug out bag, any of it. All of it. Amazon.com. Welcome to Perfectville.com. Seriously, I don't even know why you're still listening to this commercial. Go to welcometoperfectville.com, click on the amazon.com link, do all of your shopping, no hidden fees, no extra charges, and when you're done with that, come back and listen to the second half of Perfectville, which is happening right now. And we are back for the second half of Perfectville, and as much as it sucked to have to relive the Patriots game with Slaner, a.k.a. Mike Woodburn. And that is true. I think his real name is now Slaner, and his handle is now Mike Woodburn. None of us are Marty McSorley. None of us have a DeLorean. None of us can go back in time and change it. So why in the fuck do we continue to talk about it and harp on it? It's time to look forward to the very near future. And joining me here in the very near present is a longtime friend, former colleague, still a colleague in a way, actually one of the founding members of Perfectville, along with Chris Cullen, Joe Troya, and myself. He's now over at Locked On Dolphins. He can be found on Twitter. He'll tell you what his actual Twitter handle is. You'll find it in the liners of these notes. I don't know. I drank too much beer in my life to actually remember or retain anything. It's Travis Wingfield, ladies and gentlemen. Travis, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, man. Yourself?
I'm doing okay. It's raining currently in California, which tells me that God is a Dolphin because it never rains in California. And wouldn't you know it, the week that we lose to the hated New England Patriots, all of a sudden the skies open up and the wet stuff starts dropping on us. So I think everybody's sad. And that's kind of where I wanted to start with this is if you had told most Dolphins at the beginning of the season that they would be 3-1 at the end of September at the quarter pole of the season and in first place by at least a game over everybody else, everyone would be doing backflips and cartwheels and farting unicorns and shitting rainbows. However, why, if I'm putting my finger on the pulse of Dolphins everywhere and the citizens of Perfectville, why does it suck right now?
I think the best way you can really encapsulate how Dolphins fans feel right now is I saw a poll posted by, I forget who it was, but basically the guy asked, would you rather have Josh Allen or Mitch Trubisky? And it was before the Bears' last game, and the poll was overwhelmingly Josh Allen. And then after Trubisky has a 6-touchdown pass game, it becomes overwhelmingly Mitch Trubisky. So people have just a one-week snapshot memory when it comes to football, and that's all they can think about. So only thing we have in our – the only taste we have left in our mouths right now is that 38-7 drubbing. So all the goodwill built up in 3 weeks is undone by one game.
Okay, so essentially, Travis, what you're talking about is you're only as good as your last game. And I almost liken it to, you know, you can go to the same restaurant 100 times and have a great meal. And then the 101st time, you find a hair in your food and you'll swear that place off forever. And you almost just disregard the other 100 times or the overwhelming evidence. I mean, the Dolphins right now have a winning percentage of 75 or 0.750, 75%. You know, part of it, I think, is losing to the New England Patriots. Part of it is losing to the New England Patriots the way we did. And sure, it's an overreaction on some level, but I remember if you go back to the 1-15 season, if you can remember way back then, 11 years ago at this point, or yeah, that's right. After week one, the BBC's Simon Clancy went on the internet. He's a big Dolphins fan and said, "We have problems." And everyone kind of shoot it off as, no, we're 0-1, it's fine. And, you know, everyone loses a game here and there. And he went, no, we have serious problems. I would be surprised if we win more than one game this season. And throughout that rest of the season, as it started to come true, we went 1-15. It was like, holy crap, this guy saw something that a lot of other people didn't see after week one. Looking at this team right now with the injuries, with the releases that have happened, with the talent that they've traded or let go during the offseason, seeing how they performed or did not perform, I guess, against the Patriots this past week. Is this an overreaction for everyone feeling crummy at 3-1, or are there some serious glaring weaknesses and holes that you see that lead us to have legit concerns about the Dolphins for the rest of the season?
I actually remember those threads from thefins.com. He would do it every week. It was called We're in Trouble Part 1, We're in Trouble Part 2. And it was so depressing back then. That was such a long season. But as far as 2018 goes, I think it's just kind of the microcosm of what has been the issue for the Miami Dolphins for, I don't know how long, Sam, a decade. Poor offensive line play. I mean, the last 3 or 4 years, one of the worst ranked defenses in the league. And we saw all that stuff kind of coming to a head in this game. The run defense fell off the face of the earth in this game, allowed a 100-yard rusher to Sony Michel for the first time in his career. Tannehill got battered and beaten, and he just looked uncomfortable. He looked off his mark the entire game for the most part. He was missing reads. It just, it's the same things that make Dolphins fans kind of, to use a Joe Philbin quote here, a little bit queasy going forward, because this was a game they were supposed to be able to seize control of the AFC East, a changing of the guard. Tom Brady is kind of off of his throne right now. Can we seize that spot from him and become the new kings of the AFC East as the Bills and Jets are in the middle of rebuilds? Can we be the team that takes the next step forward and kicks the Patriots off that throne? Well, that was a resounding no. So now it's back to, are we competing for a wild card? If we do get into the playoffs, can we win a game there? Is Adam Gase the right guy? Is Ryan Tannehill the right guy? So I think one of the biggest reasons that I was personally bothered by it was because there are some trends developing under Adam Gase and with Ryan Tannehill as well. They start seasons slowly, which is kind of funny to say in the midst of a 3-1 start, but the offense starts games slowly. They have had a lead at only 7 out of Adam Gase's 37 career games as a head coach in Miami. That's just not getting it done, always playing from behind. And the run defense fell apart again. So those same three issues continue to persist, and you just hope that it doesn't boil or snowball into a bigger thing and continue to happen, because I suppose the schedule gets a little bit harder with at the Bengals is a tough game. You got the Bears coming up. They're really good. So if they fall to 3-3 and people probably assume that we're going to be underdogs in those next two games, then 3-3 is, you know, that's back to basically square one and everyone's, you know, calling the sky for falling.
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of the season, I looked at this team as a 7-9, 8-8, 9-7 team, and if a few breaks go their way unexpectedly, they can maybe get 10-6, which is really where you need to be to get into the playoffs. And I think starting 3-0, maybe we got a little bit of a false sense of confidence. I looked at that Raider game, if I can go back 2 weeks, and you know, you just mentioned it, the way we play from behind with Adam Gase, as bad of a, and I'm just going to say bad as a head coach as he is in the first half, he's that good in the second half. If I could take John Gruden's first half and Adam Gase's second half, I think I wouldn't feel so bad anymore, because to me it seems like Adam Gase is really kind of a rhythm and a flow sort of coach, where he kind of looks at it and says, okay, this is what I'd like to do, but depending on what's out there, I'm going to need to adjust. And then, you know, it's a mad dash to the finish line in the third and fourth quarter. That sort of coaching style can work. And then we've also seen where, you know, if you just get out to a 24-0 lead against the Dolphins, you're boat raced, you're done. It's not going to work. That, you know, that sort of play calling, that sort of strategy is one thing. The other thing I wanted to get your opinion on is, what is he like as a player's coach, as a personnel man? Because as we saw this week, Jordan Phillips was released. He seems thrilled to be out of Miami, not because he hated his teammates or he hated the team, but he doesn't really seem to like the management of this team, whether it be the front office or the coaches. I don't know if it's an Adam Gase thing or if it's a Matt Burke thing or if it's everything all encompassing, but I'm starting to sense a theme here, be it Jarvis Landry, be it Mike Pouncey, be it Jordan Phillips, be it Ndamukong Suh to a degree. All of these veterans, all of these people that we know, that we can see that had talent, nobody's discounting that, they leave here and they seem excited about it. And even Adam Gase has referenced vaguely, maybe not so vaguely, about Jarvis Landry being a cancer here recently. He didn't say anything about Jordan Phillips, but what do you make of players once they leave Miami seemingly being happy about it under Adam Gase?
There's kind of two ways to look at that. And the one is that, yeah, he can be a little bit of a stubborn asshole, for, you know, lack of a better word. And we see that in the way he handles the media and just kind of his general persona. He never looks happy. I mean, have you ever seen the guy flash a smile on the sidelines? I just never really see him, you know, putting off that I'm happy vibe. And I think that can kind of create an environment around the team, and especially when guys maybe aren't getting their way, or maybe certain guys have suggestions or things they want to do, and if they don't get their way, you know, there's plenty of people in the world like that it's their way or the highway, and maybe he ran to a few too many of those on the roster. But then again, you look across the other side of the roster with guys like Ryan Tannehill, guys like Cameron Wake, Rashad Jones. Those guys have been around Adam Gase his entire tenure here, and we've never had a problem with them. So I wonder, the Jordan Phillips one seems different to me, because this is a guy that came into the season actually number one on the defensive tackle depth chart, was supposed to be a starter, supposed to be a, you know, 60% snap type of player, which is, you know, a really high mark for a defensive tackle. And now here he is, he's taking the fourth most snaps on the defensive line. He just got passed up by two sophomore players, a fifth round and a sixth round pick. And I think that probably just kind of got into his feelings, and not to quote Omar Kelly here, but, you know, he was talking about how Jordan Phillips can't become a good player because he's always in his feeling.
Yeah, it starts to get, and again, maybe it's an overreaction to the loss because we are 3-1. I do want to hammer that point home. We are 3-1 in control of our destiny. At the playoffs started today, the Miami Dolphins would be in by a long, wide margin, and quite frankly, the New England Patriots would not. So the sky isn't necessarily falling, but you know, looking at this, and you said there were some trends there that are disturbing and alarming. One of them being third and long when you're on defense and giving up the first down. Now this seems like something that's happened time and time again, year and year again for the Miami Dolphins. But this year, a spotlight is being cast on that. This team can't get off the field. As you said, the run defense just completely disappeared and allowed a video game system to get 100 yards on them rushing in this last game against the New England Patriots. And now, all of a sudden, you have the Bengals, another 3-1 team, and a team that looks really damn good, quite frankly. I don't know much about the Bengals other than I see their score every single Sunday and go, son of a bitch, they won again. And, you know, the only thing I know about the Bengals right now is that Andy Dalton's hair is an exact replica of the helmet that he actually wears on top of the hair. And then Tyler Eifert just played show and tell with his ankle bone here this last weekend. But other than that, I don't know what they do good. I don't know what they excel at. I don't know where their weaknesses are. Help me out. How do the Miami Dolphins get to 4-1 and calm everybody's fears here in this next week?
Well, you go back to 2015, the year they started off like 11-1 or something absurd like that, and Andy Dalton, the Red Rifle himself, was in contention for the MVP award, and he had that because he had so many weapons to spread the football around to. He had A.J. Green, who's obviously an elite receiver, Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu, they had Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill, and he kind of has that same makeup right now with Tyler Boyd emerging in his third year. John Ross is a vertical threat who hasn't quite produced yet, but he does kind of hold the defense in terms of respecting his speed down the field. Mixon's been fantastic for him. Tyler Eifert stepped up before he had the ankle show and tell, like you mentioned. So the offense is really good at the skill spots, and Dalton is playing the best ball of his career right now. On the other side of the ball, they got to find a way to get Geno Atkins blocked. That guy is a destroyer of worlds, and going up against, you know, Travis Swanson and Ted Larson and Jesse Davis is kind of a scary proposition. If they can find a way to get him blocked, I think what the Falcons did on Sunday to really kind of take him out of the game and do things successfully in the running game was run that outside stretch zone, which is something that Kenyon Drake is really good at. And they can find a way to kind of get him out to the outside part of the defense and then bend it back or bounce it out wide and get on the edges of the defense. That's where they really are weak because the linebacker play has been really bad.
By the way, Travis Swanson sounds like a character that Adam Sandler plays in one of his shit movies, by the way. Doesn't it sound like an Adam Sandler creation? Like Travis Swanson, backup center, you know, one of those stupid movies that he does. And quite frankly, that's our starting center now. I mean, I just don't know how you overcome it. And you look at it, the fact that we're 3-1 and we're without our starting left guard, we're without now our starting center, we're without one of our starting defensive tackles in William Hayes. You've got Bobby McCain that's out. You've got Andre Branch, whether you like him or you hate him, he was a stalwart on that defense. He's out. Rashad Jones has missed half the season. I mean, you're looking at five or Devontae Parker. I mean, I've been shitting on him. You've been shitting on him for the last couple of years. So have I. You know, that's six significant and or starters that are now missing from a roster of 22 starters. I mean, that's a third of your roster that's now gone or has missed significant times early in this season. So the fact that they're 3-1 is somewhat, actually, I think, kudos to them. I'm trying to be positive here. But, you know, again, like you said, Geno Atkins, you've got a lot of offensive firepower for the Cincinnati Bengals, as you called him, the Red Rifle himself, Andy Dalton. That, now, I always call it the Dalton line. Is Tannehill better or worse than Andy Dalton? If he's worse than Andy Dalton, he's a bad quarterback. If he's better than Andy Dalton, he's a good quarterback. It's kind of out of skew this year because, as you said, Andy Dalton's been playing lights out so far this season. I don't know if that scale works anymore, but I mean, is this going to have to be a shootout, or is this going to have to be a low-scoring affair that we rely on a rookie kicker to maybe kick a field goal and escape with a win? How does Miami control this game? Does it need to be a high-scoring shootout sort of affair, or are we looking in the teens here in order to have the best chance of winning?
I just based on the way the offense has played so far, I don't like us in a shootout against anybody just because they don't have the sustainability to keep drives going. And as a byproduct of that, you have the defense playing 76 snaps against the Raiders, 81 snaps against the Patriots. That's just not good. It's not going to get it done. It's going to wear your ass down like it did last year when the defense just fell apart about midseason. So, and you also mentioned the injuries. Marquise Gray, by the way, was supposed to start because he kind of played that up back, fullback, H back role that can kind of do some lead dive stuff. But now he's gone. You got to scrap that entire portion of the playbook. But yeah, I think that if this game is going to go in the Dolphins' favor, they're going to have to hold the Bengals under like 27 points because the Dolphins can put that up. But like I said, sustain drives and get that up tempo offense going, because even though it's difficult on the road to do that, the reason the Dolphins are so successful at home is that no huddle, is that tempo and that rhythm. And when they sustain drives and this offense gets in that rhythm and stays on schedule, it's tough to stop because you have so many options. And with the way the Bengals are kind of lacking in the back seven, that's your best chance to take advantage. So I think that probably in the mid-20s is where you have to aim if you're going to beat this team.
Okay, I can buy that. Now, what do you think of the Miami Dolphins' run game or lack thereof over the last couple of weeks here? I mean, you've got Kenyon Drake, you've got Frank Gore, you've got a talented rookie in Ballage who hasn't seen any playing time yet. It seems like we've just abandoned it. Now, I know we haven't been successful in the few times that we have run it, but do we need to run the ball more to be as successful? And I know that sounds stupid and obvious, but do we just have to commit to, hey, you know what, we're going to get first and 10 and then second and 10 and then third and 9, but we're going to have to pound the ball a couple of times in order to take the pressure off of Ryan Tannehill, who's now got a depleted line in front of him, and in order to keep this defense a little bit honest on the backside so that when we do decide to go with a play action or some sort of pass play, maybe they're just a half a second, you know, hesitant to run in or run back because it might be a run play. I mean, do we have to just commit to failing at the run on a greater scale in order to be successful in the pass game?
You mentioned that we going over the Patriots game was just ultimately depressing, and I managed to get myself through an entire rewatch of the film, and you go back through the running plays, and there aren't many of them, like you mentioned, and every single rep they have on a running play, someone's getting their ass whooped almost immediately to the point to where there's just no hope for the running back. So I understand why they abandoned it at that point. What I saw when I watched the Bengals and Falcons game on tape was that the Falcons' most success was running misdirection and play action and getting their quarterback kind of out on the edge and just doing different things to keep their linebackers off balance. So I keep going back to their linebackers because that's really their weak area of that defense. And if they can continue to kind of roll with maybe two tight end personnel or get more heavy and bunch that formation tighter and operate play action off of that, and that can kind of, you know, you throw the ball to set up the run in that instance. I think Miami can do that if they commit to it. But like you said, Adam Gase, his entire tenure, it's been a thing where he just kind of abandons the run, whether it's Jay Ajayi or Kenyon Drake. And I think that you can't do it when you're down 24 points, but if the game is, you know, within two scores, you have to continue to do it. So I would say, yeah, you gotta keep trying, even though it's not working.
Yeah, you know, Adam Gase is almost, you can tell he's from, you know, my generation and maybe on the outskirts of your generation, that, you know, when you're playing Madden or any sort of football game, the last thing you want to do is ever run the ball. You just want to, you know, be in a shotgun and throw that ball all over the place. And it seems like he's taking that video game offense and trying to apply it to the Miami Dolphins, which sometimes it's exciting at times, but sometimes it kind of makes you scratch your head and go, well, you know, you got Kenyon Drake back there and you got Frank Gore. What am I missing? But you mentioned the linebackers of the Cincinnati Bengals and that being really the weakness here on their defense. We haven't seen much from the talented rookie Mike Gesicki with all the injuries to, as you mentioned, Marquise Gray, AJ Derby. Is this really the first opportunity that you can see Mike Gesicki possibly starting to get his name on the stat sheet beyond three catches for 25 yards? Is this a game where he can actually expose that weakness and become a target, a viable target for Ryan Tannehill?
I think it could be. I thought last game against the Patriots it could be, but because of what they ran on defense with so many defensive backs on the field, it kind of made that tough because then they could pressure the quarterback and also do different things with their coverage and drop so many guys into that zone coverage. But in this game, I mean, they do get Vontaze Burfict back, which is a big deal for them. But the good news about that is I read a quote from Preston Brown, another Bengals linebacker, who said that Vontaze looks pretty thick around the hips there. So maybe he's he's been enjoying that suspension a little too much. But yeah, I mean, he's an element that has to get going in this offense because who is that seam buster, Sam? You talked about Devontae Parker. He's, you know, not worth his weight and, you know, whatever you want to call that reference there, but he's not been able to do the job. So we don't have anybody that can really run between the numbers and make contested catches. I don't even recall that happening a single time. And you go back over Ryan Tannehill's career, some of his best throws in his career are those seam hole shots over the linebacker under the safety. You know, Charles Clay was really good in that role. I don't know if they have the bodies, because both Gesicki and Smythe are so raw in their pass protection, their run blocking right now. I hope so, but I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah, you know, some people have said Gesicki hasn't looked as bad in blocking as you know, maybe he was made out to be. I don't know. I'm looking at him on the eyeball test, and every now and then it's like, ooh, that is a scary man to be blocking anywhere on that offensive line, because he's whiffed. He's quite literally just whiffed a few times.
He's getting thrown around out there. There's a play in the game on Sunday where he got pushed. Him and Kenny Stills had like 3 yards of separation on their pre-snap alignment, and he got rerouted where the linebacker came up and jammed him, and he got pushed all the way into Kenny Stills, and they wind up not being able to run routes between the two of them because he got thrown so far off his mark. So he needs to really get more physical going forward.
Yeah, he's going to have to get a little bit bigger. I mean, he almost looks like a large wide receiver and very much a small tight end. Although, you know, you wonder if he gets bigger, you know, does that ruin the athleticism and some of the specialness of him? But I don't know. I mean, it is a rookie. I've been predicting all along that you really aren't going to see him start to come on until later in the season. I think he's got to catch up to the speed of the NFL. I mean, training camp and preseason is one thing. Going up against the big boys, the starters, week in, week out. Well, there's your test, and you see where he's at right now. Feet to the fire, Travis. What's the final score? What are you predicting? Are you going to be a good citizen of Perfectville, or are people going to run you out of town here?
Actually, this will be up by the time you record this, or by the time you publish this podcast. But I actually wrote my preview today on Wednesday as we record this podcast, and I changed my mind mid-preview. I think that because the Bengals kind of sandwich between that big win against the Falcons and maybe looking ahead to the Steelers a little bit, Dolphins, you know, the national public's down on them again. They kind of have that chip back on their shoulder. I think because of those mitigating circumstances surrounding the outside part of the actual matchup itself, the Dolphins do bounce back and find a way to win this game on the road, 27-24.
You are one of the biggest. You and Chris Cullen, I think, are twins from opposite sides of this continent here. He had us beating the Patriots last week. I was like, there's no way in hell. I mean, the Patriots haven't lost three in a row since 2002, and then the Dolphins haven't beaten the Patriots in New England since 2008, and I actually predicted a 25-13 loss, and even that was being gracious, all things considered. I'm going to be the bad guy for the second week in a row. I'm going to be hated by all the civilians here, or citizens, I should call them, in Perfectville. I'm going to go with the same score that I had for the Patriots. I'm going to go 25-13. I think we look a little bit more competent against the Bengals than we did the Patriots, but ultimately, this is a really good team. People are sleeping on the Cincinnati Bengals, and it's a very, very good, solid, all-around team, even with the weaknesses that Travis Wingfield here has pointed out. I think with all the injuries and a little bit of the locker room buzz going on with Jordan Phillips and the fact that our offensive line, man, we're down to our, what, number 6 and number 7 on the depth chart at this point. I think it's going to be a tough road to sow. And I'm going to go with 25-13 Cincinnati Bengals over our beloved Miami Dolphins. Travis, thank you for joining us here on Perfectville. Where can people find you, man? I know they don't have to look hard because you're everywhere, but throw it out there to the universe. Let the citizens who maybe do not know what you do on a daily basis for the Dolphins, where they can find you and consume your ever-loving content.
Yeah, man, my keyboard's on fire pretty much every day. So it's LockedOnDolphins.com for the, you know, pretty much daily blog column type of thing that I write for the Dolphins. And then Locked On Dolphins podcast. And then my Twitter handle is at Wingfield NFL. And that thing is just a nonstop source of Dolphins videos and opinions and stuff like that. So I'm everywhere, like you mentioned, but Locked On Dolphins is my home.
Yeah, and if you find him on Twitter, it's usually about every 2 to 3 weeks that he starts a flame war with either a current or former Miami Dolphin. It's fun for me to sit back and watch somebody else take the heat for once after years and years of getting all this hatred and vitriol thrown at me. It's okay now for I could be the good guy, I've redeemed myself, and Travis every now and then is the shit heel that all the players do not like anymore. So no, you can find him on Twitter, you can find him on Locked On Dolphins. Check him out, man. He's a fantastic writer, he's a fellow podcaster, he is a huge absolutely huge Miami Dolphins fan. For anybody that doesn't know Travis Wingfield at this point, I guess you're probably a new Miami Dolphins, so welcome. But anyway, Travis, thank you very much. Anything else you want to talk about before I let you get out of town here?
I got the baseball playoffs on tonight. I was kind of hoping for the A's to pull through. I got your Dodgers coming up. Where do they play tomorrow?
I think they play tomorrow. I got to tell you, man, that Patriots game was so bad that I was looking at my watch come the 2-minute warning and was like, you know, the Dodgers are playing the Giants soon. And it turns out the Dodgers scored 15 runs in that game. So the Dodgers actually beat the Dolphins on Sunday 15-7. I'm surprised you're rooting for the A's considering that you're a Mariners fan.
Yeah, man, you know, Moneyball had a big impact on me, and I really like Billy Bean. Plus, I mean, you can't root for the Yankees, so it all kind of works itself out.
See, you know, maybe that's because you are from, you know, a market with, no offense, that doesn't have a lot of success, but in terms of baseball anyways. But, you know, for me, I'm a Dodgers fan, and I've always rooted for the Yankees. I've always hated the Red Sox. It steams me that the Red Sox won World Series because I liked my traditional losers in baseball. I think you and I have talked about this before. I don't like the Chicago Cubs winning. I don't like the San Francisco Giants winning. I don't like the Boston Red Sox winning. I like my losing teams to be losing teams. And all of a sudden, these assholes, these little asswipe teams that are supposed to lose, start winning World Series. And these successful teams, the dynasty teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees, are being shut out. And I feel like it's not right. However, the St. Louis Cardinals continue to win almost every year, and I fucking can't stand them either. So yeah. Who knows? I don't know. I'm rooting for the Yankees. I don't know the score. Last I looked, they were winning, but I hope they win. I'd like to see a Yankees-Dodgers World Series.
I'm all about the underdog teams, the Rockies and the A's, but I think the A's are about to get bounced here in a minute. But you mentioned, you know, the fact that the Mariners haven't had much success. It's not getting better anytime soon, because look at the Houston Astros and what they've built in that roster. I don't know. It's going to take the Mariners 25 drafts to catch up to them. So baseball is in for a long haul for me.
No, I mean, I knew last year when the Dodgers played the Astros in the World Series that the Dodgers had no shot of winning, because they've got that little midget Jose Altuve who doesn't have a strike zone. His strike zone is about the size of his actual baseball bat, and he knows where to swing the bat. So if the ball comes into his quote-unquote strike zone, he's hitting that thing, and that's exactly what he did. I was telling my Dodger friends, I go, look, you might as well just walk him, because otherwise he's going to hit doubles, triples, and home runs, that little fucking runt. And that's exactly what he did the entire World Series. He just he spanked the Dodgers, and I knew it was over. But no, the Astros have a team and a half. And as you said, they've drafted well, they've traded well, they've developed beyond anybody's comprehension. So the AL West right now looks like it's going to be the Houston Astros and everyone else for the considerable near and long-term future.
And just in ultimate depressing their own fans fashion, you know, they had like a 12-game lead in the wild card this year at one point, and that went away very, very quickly. So just like the Dolphins did throughout the course of the early 2000s, the Mariners really let us down and collapsed there late in the season.
Yeah, you are a glutton for punishment between the Mariners and the Dolphins. Yeah. Who's your basketball team?
It was the Sonics, so that's going pretty good.
Yeah, you know, that's been the most successful team in Seattle the last year and a half. Well, you know what, man, as a fellow Dolphin and somebody who suffered a long time with you and worked with you and everything else, I congratulate you on your success. Thank you for joining us here in Perfectville. Welcome back, and until next time, goodbye from Perfectville. Special thanks once again to Travis Wingfield of Locked On Dolphins fame. He was a former writer and podcaster here for Perfectville. Still a good friend doing his thing. Lots of knowledge, lots of information that he just threw at your earbuds. Also, another special thanks to Mike Woodburn as well as Noah Urbanski from Fins Up and Fans Down, the podcast, also a part of the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. Both great guests. Chris Cullen will be back next week to discuss all things Miami Dolphins, including the Miami Dolphins Cincinnati Bengals game, which is the start of our Wizard of Oz schedule. Lions and Tigers and Bears, oh my. Everyone enjoy the game. I'll be watching this game probably from my man cave, or if I get brave, I will actually venture out and watch this at a bar somewhere. We are 1 week away from my birthday and me watching the Miami Dolphins versus the Chicago Bears in Miami. If anybody else is going to be at that game, let me know. I am going to be walking around with a microphone. I will be podcasting the day before and the day of, getting live natural sound of the Miami Dolphins versus the Chicago Bears. Hit me up on Twitter at PerfectvillePod. You can email us, PerfectvillePodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, keyword Perfectville, and let us know if you're going to be at that game, where you're going to be, pre-gaming, post-gaming, etc., etc., etc. I'd love to have as many citizens of Perfectville buying me alcohol for my birthday and hopefully for a Miami Dolphins win against the Bears, but we got to get there. So let's enjoy the game against the Cincinnati Bengals, and goodbye from Perfectville.
Later.